This is Washington Watch Weekly, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Now, here's our host, the president of the Family Research Council, Tony Perkins.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. Coming up, this past weekend, President Obama blamed the intelligence community for underestimating the threat of ISIS. But some say, not so fast. Did the administration have information that they simply failed to act on? Congressman Mike Pompeo of Kansas had that answer. And after warning the international community not to take their eye off of Iran in a speech to the United Nations earlier this week, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu met behind closed doors with President Obama on Wednesday. What did they discuss? Congressman Trent Franks had that answer. Also on Capitol Hill Thursday, in a special recess hearing, the mother of Sergeant Andrew Tamarisi, the Marine imprisoned in Mexico, called on President Obama to intervene. Congressman Matt Salmon of Arizona, chairman of the subcommittee, joined me on that topic. Let me encourage you to go to the website, tonyperkins.com, where you can find out more about all of today's topics. You can also sign up for my daily update right there on the website, tonyperkins.com. Well, last weekend, once again, the president showed his lack of understanding in mentioning that Islam is a religion of peace. However, not only does he misunderstand the threat of Islam, during his interview with 60 Minutes, he tried to shift the blame of his JV comment regarding ISIS to the intelligence community. I'll play a clip for you momentarily. But this administration, with its lack of understanding to the threats to America and no willingness to take responsibility, has really put the U.S. in a very dangerous place, both domestically and internationally. Kansas Representative Mike Pompeo joined me for that discussion. Mike, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you. These are very deeply connected issues. His refusal to talk about the persecution of Christians in the Middle East and other places where radical Islam has spread is directly connected to his unwillingness to acknowledge the motivation for the threat, right? The foundational reason that it is they want to do harm to us in the West and to Christianity and to reason, frankly. And so their complete refusal, whether it's workplace violence or whatever euphemism they want to throw at it, they don't understand the threat and the evil in a way that will allow America to take the actions it needs to do to keep us all safe.
Congressman, let me ask you, do you think the president is just saying that? I mean, you know, this idea, every time he says Islam is the religion of peace, is he just saying that, or does he really believe it? Because if he really believes it, that makes it even more dangerous.
You know, I don't know. I couldn't tell you what's there. But I can tell you, when you repeat something enough, it almost is always the case that you say so because you truly have that as one of your foundational understandings. I know I find that myself, right? We are passionate about those things that we fundamentally believe. He is very passionate in his commitment. He saw it in that speech now a couple weeks ago Wednesday, where he talked about this ISIS not being Islamic.
Right.
I mean, this is silliness, and worse than that, dangerous to Christians in the Middle East and dangerous to us here at home as well. I pray it's the case that he doesn't truly believe that, because I think absent that understanding, it's very difficult to marshal the resources necessary to fight what I expect is going to be a long war against these radical jihadists.
I think, Congressman, that is exactly right. Because what he has repeated, this is not a clash of civilizations. It is, in fact, a clash of civilizations. That is exactly what we're facing here. And if he is unwilling to acknowledge that, how in the world do you protect Western civilization?
I don't mean this to be lighthearted in any way, Tony, but, you know, these 12-step programs, right? The first step is to acknowledge the problem that you have.
Right.
And so there is this foundational in Western thought, there is this idea that you can't address an evil absent calling it by its name. President Reagan understood that. President Bush, although he did not complete the mission, I think he understood that deeply. And this president has shown no evidence that he understands why it is that they're bringing war to us.
Mm-hmm. Congressman, I want to play a clip from 60 Minutes in which the president, basically kind of walked back his comments about ISIS being, a kind of a JV group here. So I want you to listen to this, and then I want to ask you about it.
How did they end up where they are in control of so much territory? Was that a complete surprise to you?
Well, I think our head of the intelligence community, Jim Clapper, has acknowledged that I think they underestimated what had been taking place in Syria.
Is he throwing Clapper under the bus here?
I'd say two things about that. First of all, Mr. Clapper works for him. And so if there was a failure, it was his failure, not just Director Clapper's failure. But second, I sit on the Intelligence Committee. I mean, so I have received some of the same information that the President has received. I'm sure he even received more. But it was widely acknowledged within the intelligence community that this growing threat from Al-Qaeda was continuing. And today we call this one group ISIS. Tomorrow there'll be another. We've heard the same chorus song thrown around. We've got Al-Shabaab and AQIM. We've all these names. They are the same. At their very core, these are Al-Qaeda jihadists fighting this fight of radical Islam against the West. And so to say that you were surprised, it has to be willful blindness would be the kindest way to describe what really took place. There's been a total failure to engage these folks where they fight us each and every day, because he came to the White House with a very different agenda.
Congressman Pompeo, one of the other statements the president made, let me just get your take on it, see if that's accurate assessment, that when the U.S. left Iraq, a democracy was intact, a military that was well-equipped, and they had the ability to chart their own course, suggesting that we did not leave prematurely. You are a graduate of West Point. You have an inside understanding of what's been unfolding in the recent years. Was Iraq prepared to go it alone?
Absolutely not. And our military leaders knew that. Indeed, I saw former Secretary Panetta make that statement a couple of weeks back. His advisors were most all, Tony, telling him, we've done good work, we've made progress, the Iraqi forces have come a long way, but politically they are not prepared to stand if Maliki won't be able to withstand the forces within if we leave. And he made a commitment to the American people, and he decided to ignore those who were advising him about the right thing to do for America. And we see precisely where it's gotten us today. It is directly connected to where we began this very discussion, Tony. It's an absence of understanding the magnitude of the challenge and the commitment of these people to destroy the West. If you come from his perspective, you might well think you could walk away in December of 2011 from Iraq, but in fact, it's led us directly to where we are today, having now to try and tackle ISIS in its very mature stages.
So was this purely a political decision for him to pull out to appease the anti-war element of his party? I mean, obviously when the intelligence and the military community says we're not ready, the only thing left is that this was a political decision, or maybe it was purely ideological.
I just think he believed it. I think you've hit on it. I think he believed that it was time for us to come home. And then coming home didn't present risk because he misunderstands the threat. And so I'm sure there were political folks in his base demanding that he do it, but I also think it's consistent with who he is as a leader and what he believed would be in America's best interest. It's not enough to blame others. The president bears direct responsibility for what we're facing today.
Congressman Pompeo, thanks so much for being with us. Always appreciate it when you stop by and give us an update on the latest events happening in our country and in our world.
You're most welcome. Thank you for having me on the show today, Tony.
That was Congressman Mike Pompeo of Kansas. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and you can follow the links over. All right, don't go away, because we're coming back with more of this weekend edition of Washington Watch. When we return, Congressman Trent Franks talks about the president's meeting with the Israeli prime minister that took place earlier this week. Don't go away. We're coming right back.
America's first liberty, the freedom of religion, is being threatened. It's being pushed out of our public life, out of our schools, and even out of our churches. FRC has partnered with Liberty Institute to document these events. Our new report is titled, Undeniable, the Survey of Hostility to Religion in America. It's not exhaustive, but it records almost 1,200 incidents of hostility to religion. We invite you to download your copy at religioushostility.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks so much for being with us this weekend. Hey, let me just remind you, coming up in just a few weeks, it'll be election time. I want to make sure that you are, in fact, registered and voting. It's so important that we as Christians are engaged in the process. As Americans, we have the opportunity to participate in government, and that means voting. But as Christians, I believe we have a responsibility to be engaged in the process. That's being salt, and that's being light. To find out more, go to the website tonyperkins.com to find out more about how you can be involved. Well, for the first time since the so-called peace talks broke down between the Israelis and the Palestinians, President Obama and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu met at the White House this week. The effort by this administration to play it safe with Iran has put continual strain on the U.S.-Israeli relations, as the Prime Minister reiterated again this week the importance of not allowing Iran to reach the threshold of developing nuclear weapons. The representative from the 8th Congressional District of Arizona, Trent Franks, joined me for that conversation. Trent, welcome back to Washington Hello. Watch.
Well, Tony, I'm always glad to be back with you, sir.
Well, we're glad to have you on. You're one of the champions on Capitol Hill, and we appreciate your leadership on so many issues, on the life issue, the family issues. But you're also a strong advocate for the relationship between America and Israel. Your thoughts on the meeting yesterday between the Prime Minister and the President, as the Prime Minister once again drove home the concern they have about Iran?
Well, you know, this is the 12th meeting that they've had, and there was the prerequisite niceties, you know, that happen with meetings like this. They were polite to each other, but there was noted tension in the meeting, Tony. And I certainly can understand that, you know, on Benjamin Netanyahu's part, he has to sit down with the President of the United States, whose administration has just issued sort of a sternly worded critique or criticism for Israel continuing to build homes in their own cities. And I've always found it astonishing that somehow this president reserves greater criticism for an ally building homes in its capital city than he does for an enemy building nuclear weapons with which to threaten the peace and security of the entire world.
You're absolutely right. In his, as the Prime Minister tried to make the point once again, and he's done this each time he's spoken and each time he's met with the president, about preventing Iran from reaching that threshold of being able to develop nuclear weapons, the president responds, encouraging the prime minister to find ways to prevent Palestinian civilian casualties like those inflicted in the recent Gaza war between Israel and Hamas. Now, why doesn't the president call on Hamas not to use women and children as human shields?
Well, Tony, I tell you, after a while, it almost seems predictable that I'm going to criticize this president. But I've almost exhausted the limits of the English language expressing my bewilderment of how this president seems to get it wrong every time. The truth is, Israel puts their own Israeli defense forces at risk, doing everything they can to protect Palestinian children. And if only Hamas would do the same thing and not use them, as you say, as human shields, which is exactly the right nomenclature, then it would change the entire dynamic. But we have, on the one hand, Hamas using these innocent children as human shields. On the other hand, Israel doing everything in its power to minimize civilian casualties while their opponents are trying to maximize civilian casualties. And this president finds a moral equivalence in that. And I just find it almost beyond my ability to articulate the disgust that I hold that whole mindset in.
Right. And the prime minister, in his speech before the United Nations earlier in this week, made that point very clear, as he actually showed a photograph that was taken by a French news outlet that showed one of the rocket launchers and children playing around it. It was in, and we know they were caught with arsenals of weapons, rockets, in UN schools. So we know they're doing it. It's not that there's no question about it. But he also went on to say what they did, the extraordinary steps that the IDF took in terms of they sent, they made phone calls, they sent text messages, They did everything they could to alert the civilian population that an airstrike was coming. So I cannot think of a military operation that went to greater lengths that I'm aware of to warn civilians.
Well, I couldn't agree more. You know, I know that you know, sometimes that human casualties in war are a part of it, but it's really about intent. It's about doing everything you can to minimize innocent civilian casualties. And I have to say to you, I think Israel has demonstrated an unprecedented example for the world. They fight wars like no one else does. They win them, but they fight them like no one else does, and that is in their overarching tremendous effort to make sure that they minimize civilian casualties. Oh, that their enemies would do the same thing.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, joined by my good friend Congressman Trent Franks of Arizona, talking about the Prime Minister of Israel meeting yesterday with the President of the United States. I want to go back to this issue before we run out of time, Congressman. The issue of Iran and the nuclear capabilities that they are pursuing and what this means to the Middle East. I know we're all focused on ISIS and what's happening in Iraq and what's happening in Syria, but could we be taking our eye off the greatest threat, as the Prime Minister said before the United Nations earlier this week?
Well, I absolutely believe that we could be doing exactly that. You know, I want to say this right, but Tony, my office was the first to call for Iran to be referred to the Security Council 8.5 years ago, related to their enrichment of uranium and their pursuit of fissile material. And at the time, you know, it was considered overreaction, but, you know, because they only had 160 centrifuges and our critics said they need 3,000. I said, that's where they're going. I was wrong. They have 19,000. The truth is that there's two components to every threat. And the first one is intent. ISIS and people like that show us the intent and the ultimate manifestation of this Islamist ideology, where it can go. But the second component is capacity. And if Iran produces nuclear weapons, terrorists the world over will have at least indirect access to nuclear weapons, and it will change our way of life in ways that none of us, I think, contemplate. We will need a new calendar to really measure the new dispensation that will be in the world, because we will be facing nuclear weapons in the hands of madmen that are willing to destroy their own country, or at least portions of their own country, in order to wreak havoc on Israel and America. And I can't fathom that the President of the United States, the titular head of the forces of freedom on earth, turns a blind eye to a country like Iran that's seeking nuclear weapons with which to threaten the entire stability of the human family.
I couldn't say it better. Congressman Franks, thanks so much for being with us. As always, Trent, appreciate your insights.
God bless you, sir.
Well, that was Congressman Trent Franks of Arizona. To find out more about Trent and the great work he's doing, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow the links over. All right, don't go away. When we come back with this weekend edition of Washington Watch, Congressman Matt Salmon joins us with an update on the Marine being held in prison in Mexico. You won't want to miss this interview. That's next, right here on the weekend edition of Washington Watch.
Should Christians get involved in politics or focus on evangelism? Historically, Christians have disagreed, but theologian and author Dr. Wayne Grudem has some answers in his new booklet titled, Why Christians Should Seek to Influence Government for Good. Dr. Grudem explores the history and theology of Christian public service and challenges us to be well-informed and vote wisely. So what will you do with the opportunity you've been given? To download your copy of this booklet, visit frc.org/Christian Influence.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, last Saturday night at the Values Voter Gala, where we honored Miriam Ibrahim, the Sudanese Christian mother who was imprisoned for her Christian faith and sentenced to die, finally released. We celebrated that as she was there with us last weekend. But I mentioned that there was a time not too long ago when it meant something to be an American. You had the confidence that no matter where you were in the world, that our nation had your back. Well, add one more American to the list that the Obama administration has left behind, Marine Sergeant Andrew Tamarisi, who continues to sit in a Mexican prison. Tamarisi is 25 years old and has served two deployments in Afghanistan. After mistakenly crossing the border, after missing the final exit to remain in the U.S., Sergeant Tamarisi was stopped by Mexican authorities with weapons and ammo, which he legally had in his car. In a Foreign Affairs Subcommittee hearing this week, Congressman Matt Salmon said, quote, he has spent 6 months in prison for what was a wrong turn. Our war hero needs to come home, end quote. And I could not agree more. Arizona Congressman Matt Salmon joined me for that conversation this week. Congressman Matt Salmon, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. It's really an honor to be on with you.
Well, I appreciate your leadership as a Marine myself, a Marine veteran. I think it's just unbelievable that our president has refused to intervene on behalf of this Marine that's been sitting in a prison, reportedly, from what his mother says, it's been under some very stressful and dangerous conditions.
You know, the president has bragged time and time again about having a pen and a phone. It's just really sad that he won't use his phone for any good use. He's had ample opportunity to speak with the president of Mexico personally regarding Andrew, and he has refused to do so. I've been down to the prison in Mexico now twice to meet with Andrew. He was promoted in theater in Afghanistan. He did two tours there. And promoted in theater because of his valor and his commitment, which is very rare these days, very rare. And he saved lives while he was there. His buddies, his colleagues have testified that he has impeccable character. But he did get a serious concussion while he was over there due to an IED blast. And he is now suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, which is a serious, serious issue, and it's only being compounded by the fact that he's rotting away in this prison. And you know, the president, when he traded the five terrorists for Sergeant Bergdahl, when he did that, he boldly said on national TV that I am the commander-in-chief and I will leave no soldier behind. Why is he leaving this soldier behind?
And I think, Congressman Sam, I think you made that point yesterday in the hearing.
I did make that point yesterday, and I asked Mrs. Tamarisi if the president had personally reached out to her, if he called her, and she said no, he had not. And I asked if, to the best of her knowledge, the president had personally engaged at all. And I knew the answer to that already. I've been working on this for 5 months. And I personally met with Vice President Biden, talked with him about this. He said he would relay that to the president, and he was mortified. He said he was mortified, and he said that most definitely he would share that with the president. The very next week, the president had a phone call with the president of Mexico, and he didn't bring it up. And so,
I,
for the life of me, I can't understand why the president does nothing. We're doing everything that we can. This hearing yesterday shined the spotlight on, you know, what's going on with Andrew and why he should be home. I got a call from the Mexican ambassador right after the hearing, and he told me that he believed that Andrew would be out in about 2 weeks. You know, he should have been out 5 months ago.
Now, Congressman, I have been working on a number of these cases, one in particular, Miriam Ibrahim, and of course,
I'm familiar with that one.
Had a good outcome. Familiar. Had a good outcome in that one, but the same response, nothing from the administration. Pastor Saeed Abedini, who's being held in an Iranian prison, an American, still no word from the president. The president has not met with or called Nogmeh, his wife. So this is the MO for this administration.
For the life of me, I don't understand it. But here's the same president that missed close to 60% of his national security briefings. That was just, you know, published recently. You know, within minutes after he gave the speech of how horrified he was, you know, when the first reporter's head was cut off by ISIS, he was out yucking it up with his pals playing golf, and you know, it's just really hard for me to fathom how a commander in chief could comport himself this way. And it's hard not to be really emotional. I'm kind of, you know, fighting it back right now. I got to tell you, this is a great kid, and I can't understand how our country is not moving heaven and earth to get him home.
Well, for one, I appreciate what you're doing, Congressman, and I think sometimes we have to take these things personal, or we don't have the emotions and the feeling, and we don't empathize with the parents and the people who go through these things. And I think that's part of the barrier the president has put between him and most Americans. One final question, because I got this from some of your colleagues in discussing this case, is that one who spoke to someone working for the Mexican president said all that was required would be for our president to pick up the phone and call him, and they would let him go. Is that true?
Look, I don't know that to be true. I believe that if the president called their president and, you know, exerted some political pressure, I believe that he would have been out by now. Yes, that's what I believe. I don't know if that has been communicated by somebody, you know, high up in the Mexican government, but I believe that if the president showed some interest in this, I mean, he was willing to trade five scary terrorists for Bergdahl. Why can't he even make a phone call for this young man who there's no question, none, zero, about his level of commitment to the uniform that he wore in the Marine Corps? None. In fact, all of his colleagues who served with him had nothing but praise about the way he comported himself as a soldier. And so, I'm mystified that the president sits back and does nothing.
Amazing. Congressman Matt Salmon, thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for all that you're doing on behalf of Andrew and his family.
Thank you very much, Tony. And again, it's just really an honor to be on your program. I'm really proud of the work you do.
Again, that was Congressman Matt Salmon of Arizona. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com, and follow the links over. And you can help on this by simply contacting your member of Congress and asking them to support Congressman Salmon's efforts to get Sergeant Tamarisi released from this Mexican prison. Again, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. Well, folks, that's all the time we have today. Thanks so much for being with us for this weekend edition of Washington Watch. Until next time, let me leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians chapter 6, where he says, "When you've done all you can do, when you've prayed, you've prepared, and you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing."
Washington Watch Weekly is a donor-supported ministry of the Family Research Council.